Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to A Word with Tom Merritt. I'm Tom Merritt, and this is the show where I get the pleasure and privilege of sitting down with some of the smartest, most interesting people in the world to talk about how we think. There's no way we can all know everything. We all have to make our own shortcuts. And it's always good to compare notes with each other on how we do that. These are the kinds of conversations I've been having all my life with my grandpa Carl in his front room, my grandma Roxy in her front room. And I got lots of different ways of looking at the world and great conversations all leading me to this moment right now. Welcome into the front room, Brian Hoffman.
Thank you, Tom. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it, man. You are a lot of things. I wouldn't presume to even know all the things that you do. I know you're a pilot, among others. How do you describe things yourself?
Wow. Probably a little bit of a jack of all trades. I am very fascinated about almost everything. I fly airplanes. I've been in the military. Very knowledgeable enthusiast on solar, as you well know. I have a farm, love our trees, love our fish, got into genetics because of a friend of mine. Pretty much dabble in just about everything. I've got friends with all kinds of interests and hobbies, and every time I either fly with them or talk with them, I want to know what's going on and what the new thing is.
And you've also been very kind in listening to this show and sending me your impressions and thoughts, which is incredibly helpful to hear outside perspectives on that. So thank you for doing that.
This show has been a fascinating show for me. Like you, I've had these conversations with either parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, my friend George, who was a World War II veteran, and like I've told you before, if we don't share knowledge, it's lost. So these conversations to me are fascinatingly fun to listen to.
One of the things I love about this is a concept I picked up from Brian Brushwood, which is that new light you get on how you think about things when you talk to someone else. And obviously everyone's mind goes to like, oh, when you talk to someone you disagree with, which is true. But even when you talk with someone who you agree with and you know you agree with, you'll say, oh, but you believe this thing for a slightly different reason, or you brought in a piece of information I wasn't aware of. And I feel like everybody ends up being richer because of that.
I think the conversations where I don't agree with the other person is where I learn the most.
Sure.
You have to be willing to listen to the other side.
So your word to kick us off today is fear. Why did you pick that word?
Fear is fascinating. Think about fear. We have, you know, the lizard brain, the monkey brain, the human brain, all the different parts of our brain, as the neurobiologist will tell you, it affects all three. It affects it positively, negatively. It causes us to do things and to not do things. It causes us to want to change stuff. It's a trillion-dollar industry if you think about all the stuff that happens because we're afraid to either be seen in public with our hair messy, smelling bad. I mean, all the things that go on, song and verse. I mean, artist after artist will talk about something that did or didn't happen, you know,
the fear of missing out,
fear of missing FOMO. I mean, the whole thing,
yeah,
all the stuff that's out there is just, it's amazing. And I've turned 60 and, I don't fear much, but I've had that conversation with myself where I notice I have more days behind me than I have in front of me. And some of those fears just melt away at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a certain amount of time left, and you either go do those things or you don't.
I think one of the advantages you get the longer you live, and I'm a little bit behind you, not too far, but a little bit behind you. But one of the things you realize is the worst thing about fear is the experience of it, not the thing you're fearing. Not in right. every case. There are certain things that you should be very afraid of. I'm not trying to discount that, but most of the things that you were talking about, you know, fear of smelling bad or fear of something going wrong or fear of missing out, the fear is actually the worst part. I just last week, I had a procedure I had to do. It's a perfectly routine procedure. It's totally normal. I talked about it on my newsletter. And as intellectually as I knew, like, this is nothing, it's not a problem, there was just that little part of me that was the fear. It was way worse than the actual thing that, you know, took 20 minutes and was over. It's
right.
I can't remember the actual phrase now, but there's one of those sayings like, the thing is never as bad as the fear of it or something like that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've had friends and family members that get the big cancer diagnosis and you go, oh, holy shit. The world has changed. And you now have to either dive into it and learn and understand and be part of the process or hide from it. And I've seen people do both. And I think you have a much better outcome jumping in. It's interesting when my wife has survived cancer and going to watch when she's doing the infusion, I'm sitting there with her in the lobby waiting for our turn. And you can look at all the faces. Some are fearful. Mm-hmm. Some are happy. Some are there for the third time. My buddy George that I talk about, World War II veteran, third time, fourth time, it finally took him. But he didn't fear it anymore. It's just, I have things to do. I'm going to go get them done. It's an amazing world we live in.
Not just for cancer, but a lot of things like that. I've heard people say that the worst part, and this isn't true for everybody, I'm not trying to throw everybody in the same bucket, but the worst part for them was waiting to find out, do I have leukemia? Do I have lung cancer? Do I have whatever the disease is? The waiting was the worst. Once they got the diagnosis, things were much easier, not because it was an easy disease, but because they got past the not knowing. They got to the point where, like, okay, now I can do something about it.
And there's a song about that.
Yeah. What's the song?
The waiting is the hardest part.
Yes. How could I forget?
The thoughts about the wait. I've been there for several times watching things happen. Mm. And the worst wait is when it's happening to somebody else, when you're the caregiver.
Yeah.
You're helpless. And man, what a place to be.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a much smaller way than most of the ways we're talking about here. But, you know, my dog had cancer. And I feel like that impacted me even more than my dad having a stroke in a lot of ways, partly because I couldn't do anything about it. You know, and dogs, you can't really talk to them about it. You can't talk them through it. You can't explain what's going to happen. So I get what you're saying in lots of different ways. When you are not the person going through it, a lot of times it's worse. I always say funerals are for the people left behind.
Funeral for the family. Yep.
Yeah. I used to say, I don't care what you do after I'm dead. But now I realize, you know what? I have a little bit of an obligation to figure it out because they're the ones that are going to have to deal with it, not me.
Yeah, but I want 5 minutes for my rebuttal.
Yeah, how are you going to execute on that one?
I don't know. I'll record something.
Yeah.
At some point.
That's good. Fear is a good thing.
It can be.
It's often debated as a bad thing, but it's a good thing. It's only bad when it goes haywire. Would you agree that mostly fear is trying to warn us against something?
Well, I look at fear three different ways. Mm. You've got fear that helps us and protects us, like fear of fire, fear of venomous snakes, fear of falling off a cliff. Those fears are good fears, and they help us. They keep us alive. You have the fear every year, you know, the rest of the people in the tribe screaming, hey, threat coming. Mm-hmm. That now, you know, fight or flight. We now know what to do. We either part of that process or we're not. You have irrational fears, fear of a clown. Some people fear things.
I don't know if that's irrational, Brian, but go ahead. Yeah, carry on.
But okay. Well, fear of something that's irrational. Yeah. How's that? I know. But you have a fear that you don't know. You can't explain why you have that fear. Well, that one's obviously hindering you. Mm-hmm. The word wallflower comes from people who are afraid to go ask somebody to dance. You know, we've all seen it. We've all been there. There's movie after movie about that as well. The outcome can either be you have nothing, which you already have, or you could be slightly humiliated, or you could go dance with the person you want to dance with. Two of those outcomes are okay. One's great. But people look at the one outcome of humiliation and go, that's hard. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that, and then you've got the other fears, which are given to you. We have some words right now that are being bantered around in our society. And some people don't want to get those labels. So they fear an action that may cause them to be labeled. Mm-hmm. I don't fear being labeled anymore because I know who I am. I know what I believe in. I served my time in the military to protect and defend the Constitution. I know what I stand for. You want to label me with something? Go ahead and try. We'll have that. Well, I'll have a conversation with you, however long it takes.
Getting to those three types of fear specifically, I feel like when fear is a bad thing, it's because our signaling system is messed up. You touched on, you know, in the tribe or the community, in the old days, the fear of the dark forest was a good thing. Cause you know what? In the forest, you can't see the threats and there are threats in there. Don't go in the dark forest. Makes sense. Fear of the dark in your own house is kind of that going haywire. If you right. catch my meaning, it's the old fear that used to work really well, but suddenly it's out of whack. How do you tell for yourself when to overcome a fear and when to listen to it?
I had a very, very, very good friend, way back in my early career where I was working on some pretty cool projects behind closed doors with big locks on them, that said, no matter what the problem is, I can always make it worse. i.e. I can be afraid or I can do something stupid. So I, being a pilot, have training, very specific training to teach me how, hey, when the big red light goes on, what am I supposed to go do? First thing you need to do is take a breath and make sure, recognize, confirm, and then do whatever recovery. So I fall back on those skills quite often. But what I will tell you is when I was really young, the first time I ever experienced a fear like that, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was 6, 7, 8 years old. I don't remember, but I heard this thumping noise and it kept getting louder and louder. It turned out it was my heartbeat, but my own fear was causing me to be more fearful.
Which caused your heart to beat more, which caused the thumps to get closer. Yeah.
Right. And so when I finally figured that out, I went, okay, I can control that one. Mm-hmm. That one's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that was the start of my interest in the word fear is, it can be good or bad.
So how do you tell when it's good or bad?
Man, that's the $1 million question, isn't it?
How do you do it?
Me? I prepare. Mm-hmm. I prepare for all kinds of stuff. As you well know, I have a farm. So on the farm, there can be venomous snakes. I have a big body of water, so I can have water snakes. Some of them venomous, some of them not. We have a big forest, so there could be, you know, copperheads. We could have water moccasins, rattlesnakes, whatever. So you don't just stick your hand in a big pile of brush.
Yeah.
You make sure you check it first.
You learn what to do.
Right. You just learn how to stop that being a problem. Mm-hmm. When something shows up unannounced, like an Amazon guy came to the house the other day with a big headlight on his forehead, and he was moving towards the house in an odd manner because he was walking around our driveway. We had one car parked there that I didn't know. Our neighbor had parked one of the cars in our driveway. So he's walking around the car, and it looked like something really odd was going on. Well, the first thing I did was take a quick look, and then the next thing I do is go confront it, open the door. Hello. So I'm more of a confronter of bad problems instead of a runaway from bad problems. In the training, we've always been taught there are wolves, sheep, and sheepdogs. The the decision you have to make is, which one are you? Mm. And do you want to stay that way? I prefer being the sheepdog. And so therefore, that requires me to do certain training, and it requires me to have certain advantages and disadvantages. And I take certain risks because of it, but I'm okay with that. So the knowledge is the way to get around it.
Have you ever had a situation where you experienced fear and were glad and listened to it, you know, because you're like, oh yeah, I'm glad the fear came up because that stopped me from doing X or suffering X.
The largest fear I ever had that I can recall, Canyonlands National Parks, beautiful place, but there is a trail that is on the edge of about a 1,500-foot drop off. Mm-hmm. My wife and I were there with our three young children, 2, 5, and 7 at the time. I did not like being on that ridge at all because young children, they don't understand the fear of that. Mm-hmm. I got off that ridge as fast as I could. That was one of those fears where you go, I lost control. Mm-hmm. And I didn't prepare correctly. So, yeah, that was a fear that stayed with me for a little while with the adrenaline rush. Mm-hmm. But still a beautiful place. I love going there.
Have you ever been thankful for a fear where you're like, ooh, I'm glad I had the fear response because if I hadn't, I would have done something dumb.
Whew, wow. Probably.
If you think of one and you're like, yeah, I don't want to share that one, that's totally fair. Like, I'm not trying to push
you. Yeah, there's one or two I'm not
sharing. That's fine. But you know what I mean? That moment when you realize like, oh, I'm glad I have emotions. It's a good thing. Yeah.
Fear is a great thing, but it's a tool. And the one thing I will say about fear is designed to be overcome. It's mm-hmm. designed to be conquered. And I think a lot of people lose that perspective of fear. Now, I'm not going to stick my hand on top of a burning stove mm-hmm. just so I can, quote unquote, overcome that fear. I know better.
Yeah, it's a small but a great example of a fear that's very serviceable. The fear of getting burned by the stove, it's not a fear you should overcome. And it's not a fear that's going to debilitate you, right? Fear doesn't have to. Fear can be respected and like, oh, yeah, no, that's a good one. It's not going to ruin my life, but it's going to save me from getting burned.
But you're not born with that fear. Mm-hmm. You have to be taught that fear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the interesting thing about all that. Some you are born with, some you have to be taught, some are bestowed upon you. Fear is an interesting word.
Yeah, I feel like fear is something that you have to. There are some innate fears. There are a lot, and in fact, a lot of phobias come out of innate fears: fear of spiders, fear of snakes. Those are preservations. And then once you learn, oh wait, not all snakes are bad. Here's how to tell the good ones from the bad ones. Here's how to do the right thing. Then you've overcome that fear. But I do think that once you get past being afraid of fear, I think is the thing people have to get past, is when you can sort that out. Do you think?
I would agree with that. But I will say there are no bad snakes. There are venomous snakes and non-venomous snakes, but all of them play a part in our.
Sure. There's just ones I'd rather not bite me. Put it that way.
I prefer they all not bite me, but
yeah, there's ones that are harder to deal with than others. Maybe.
Right. Some take shots. The others don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Snakes are a great one because, you know, the fear of snakes prevents someone from risking, you know, putting themselves in harm's way. But overcoming the fear of snakes helps them appreciate in the way that you're saying here, that you can now see the value of all the snakes and their different niches and how they play their part.
Right. And we're not on their food list. So they do not want to bother us. They'd rather get away.
They're afraid, actually.
They're afraid.
Yeah, yeah.
Their lizard brain is saying they want to run away.
Because they're literally lizards. So that's all they got to go with. Right. Yeah, I feel like there's stages in as you grow with fear. Tell me what you think of this. Is first, you know, learning how to deal with fear, learning how to overcome fear. And then I would say, you know, people who have moved past that, like yourself, it's learning to respect fear. It's knowing that there's a certain element of fearlessness that would be foolishness and knowing that line.
I agree with that. That's one of the things I wrote. I said, another word for fear is intense respect. and it's whether for a thing or a process.
Yeah, yeah.
Respecting what it can or can't do and how it's either beneficial or harmful.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Are there fears that you think you still need to conquer?
Oh, of course. I'm human. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did I come up with a list? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, are there any you'd be willing to share? I know for me, it's just anxiety. I have an anxiety disorder that causes me to just have generalized fear. And I've learned over time that the first thing I have to do is remind myself that unless there's something really obvious, there's nothing to be afraid of. This is just my body going out of whack. And then it's riding it out, basically. That's one that I still experience, and I've gotten better and better over time at dealing with it. But it's kind of the worst one because there's no object for it. It's just a thing that crops up.
I don't know that this is a real fear, but one of the things that I think about is fear of not being able to help somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know, quote unquote, when the bell tolls,
mm-hmm.
I'm there to try to help other people
right.
often. And if I'm unable to help them, that's going to be tough.
The fear of freezing or being prevented or
no, just not being able to.
Yeah.
I don't freeze up. I've had way too much training with military stuff and flying stuff and all the different things I do in my life.
But it just being impossible for you to
correct.
Render that
not
aid.
Able.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As a pilot, you're surrounded every day by a lot of people who are afraid of what you're doing. The fear of flying, right? The people who get on a plane, who no matter what, certainly people flying for the first time, but I know a lot of people who fly regularly and they're like, yep, I hate it. Hate takeoff. I hate landing. I imagine that you probably don't have a fear of flying, although I could be wrong.
No fear of flying whatsoever. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I figured as much. What do you say to people? I'm sure you get this question a lot. Who are afraid of flying? How do you help them out?
One of the things I tell people is, if I'm not afraid, there's no good reason for you to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I've got way more experience, way more knowledge. I know how the airplane works. I know what weather it can withstand. I know how to go around the weather. Now, if something like clear air turbulence shows up, it can be forecasted or it could be unforecasted. I have a procedure in place if that happens. We'll slow the aircraft down. Therefore, we're not hitting it quite, quote unquote, as hard or as fast. So I can mitigate certain problems. But the reality is airplanes don't fall out of the sky. I mean, they're built by some of the smartest people and some of those dedicated people. Airplanes are really fascinating because if you watch what the FAA requires to certify an airplane to fly, it's going to be way stronger than anything I'm ever going to put it through to survive. And I always tell people, if I'm in the back deadheading between, you know, picking up this airplane or that airplane, look, if I'm in the back drinking a Coke or a coffee and you're upset and you look over at me and I'm just drinking my coffee, you can stop being upset now, because if I'm not concerned, there's no real reason to be concerned.
That's a good tip. I would call it modeling. You're telling them to model your behavior, like use me as the touchstone. Anything else? Any other tricks? If someone's like, yeah, that's great, I understand that, but it's not helping.
Oddly enough, if someone is really nervous or has a real anxiety going on, having them breathe deeply and slowly causes you have two systems, basically, the voluntary and involuntary system in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Your heart rate, you can somewhat control, but that takes a lot of effort. But your breathing weight, you can control very easily. You just inhale and exhale, right?
Yeah.
You can do that faster or slower. Well, if you can teach people to slow down their breathing, breathe deeper, and gross muscles, if you constrict your gross muscles – just for a minute and then release them.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things has a sympathetic relaxing of the involuntary system. They will become more calm. it's just the way the body works. So just having them breathe a little bit, you know, breathe deep, 4 or 5 breaths, you know, tighten up your core for a second, release. How do you feel? And they'll go, I feel better.
Yeah. It's just a thing that works.
It's pretty neat to watch.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good advice. The deep breathing thing is something that I've employed myself many a time. It's something I learned in search and rescue training is my instructor called it the rider and the horse. The horse is those involuntary systems and you're the rider. Right. And so you can usually control the horse, that, you know, your heartbeat being an example of that. You can do things to affect the horse, but sometimes the horse takes off, and it's a little harder to control, and you got to work a little harder to get it back under control. And the other thing he was teaching us at the time was, and sometimes your horse is right. Sometimes the rider, yeah, you know, needs to pay attention to the horse. The horse is trying to tell you something.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a line to look at there. Do you pay attention to your horse?
I probably pay more attention to my horse than I should sometimes.
Yeah.
Simply because there are so many bad things that can happen. We're inundated by the news and all the bad things, right? Mm-hmm. How many news stories do you see of something good going on? They're so far, few and far between, that we just see more and more bad stuff. And then, let's face it, since COVID, people have kind of lost their minds driving on the highways. Driving's
gotten
worse. We
call it drifters. Eileen and I have noticed that. There's just more than ever since 2020, people just like, they just kind of drift along. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. So, there's more to be concerned about right now. Unfortunately, I think we've lost some of our societal contract to do the right thing for the benefit of all. And
I think those things go in cycles. Certainly the news thing is a product of the fact, it's the product of our innate fear sense that we want to know what to be afraid of. And so if you do a news source that is mostly good news, it will fail, because the way we evolved is to pay attention to the threats, not the things that aren't going to threaten us. We all enjoy hearing good news, but it doesn't compel us the way dangerous news does. And so that's one of the reasons you always see the bad news. But on top of that, you're right. We're coming out of a cycle of relatively good times, and going into a cycle of things being problems, and we're seeing more problems than we have. I try to remind myself, you know, what it was like in the 70s, you know, when you'd be driving along the highway and a bunch of motorcyclists would pass by and you'd wonder if they were up to no good or just motorcyclists. It seems ridiculous now. Like, all the motorcyclists I know are fine, but you know, that's just one example of weird thing. There were many more weird things happening, I feel like, back then than even now. And so these things go in cycles, don't you think?
And there's twice as many of us on the planet now.
Yeah, that too. Right. So it's a little more crowded.
That's an interest. It's more crowded. So maybe we're getting more used to things.
Yeah, that has good and bad effects, don't you think? It can allow us to run into more situations that we wouldn't otherwise, and then get better at dealing with them, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You get to see a lot more of the world than most people, I would expect.
6 continents so far.
Yeah.
And
when you fly into Antarctica,
it's on the list. It's absolutely on the list. I'd like to get there, but people around the world pretty much want the same thing. They want to leave things better for their children than they had. And that's pretty universal, no matter where you are, no matter what language they speak. And that's pretty interesting to see. We're a lot more similar than different, no matter who you put in the room. Yet we have built-in fears, or we have learned or trained fears that really aren't doing us a whole lot of good.
Yeah, I haven't traveled nearly as widely as you have, but in the amount that I have, it was stunning to me to learn just how similar people are. There are what are usually called cultural differences. I call them habits, you know, and that's those are similar things to when you join a new book club or you start visiting you move to a new town and you go to a new bar and you realize, oh, they do things a little different here. It's another version of that. There are social norms that people accept. They're like, oh, you take off your shoes before you go in the house here. Okay. That's just the way they do things. But the fundamentals, the things that make us human, that aren't just habits like that, those are strikingly similar, like you say.
And different. Try to order a beer in Australia, Ireland, Germany, and Japan. If you do it the exact same way, you're going to get four different answers.
Yeah, those are the habits. The habits are different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The habits are different. So you have to know.
Yeah. But once you get past that, they're all drinking beer, and for the same reason, usually. Yeah.
They're just having a good time drinking with their buddies, reminiscing about whatever happened.
Well, this has been fun. I was not afraid of this conversation, but the being able to deal with fear and the conversation around it has been great. And before we get to the final game, the word game, is there anything else on fear that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I have two statements I wrote, and that says cowardliness is not the same thing as fear, and courage is not the lack of fear. Courage is overcoming the fear. Back to the World War II people, they had a lot of courage, and they also didn't want to let their buddy beside them down. Courage is something I think we need to do an awful lot more teaching every generation. We need to be able to stand up for that which is right. And the last thing I would say that I've kind of written down here is turn fear into an ally, not an adversary. Learn to control your fears. You can do anything.
Yeah, I think that's real smart. I try to see fear as an inert object, right? It's a signal. Sometimes that signal might be wrong. Sometimes it's right. But it's merely a signal. It's not a thing that really can prevent you unless you let it.
Whatever you do with that signal is how you handle that fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be afraid of the signal.
Don't be afraid of the signal because it's trying to tell you something either good or something not so good.
The trick is figuring out what it's trying to tell you and then what you want to do with that. Right.
Right. Yeah. And if you do something proactively, you're probably gonna have a much better outcome.
Well, Brian, as you know, I like to finish with a little word game called This or That. Are you ready to play?
I'm in. All right.
Here we go. First one, tea or coffee?
Tea, always tea, with honey.
Tea with honey. I see that the stereotype of someone who's ex-military and a pilot would be coffee, coffee, coffee. So what's your favorite kind of tea?
I don't drink coffee. Earl Grey.
Hot.
Yeah. Earl Grey. Well, in Texas, you know, I have my sweet iced tea right here.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
But if I'm drinking hot tea, Earl Grey is my favorite.
Solar.
Anything with lemon in it.
Solar or wind?
Ooh. Probably solar. I got a lot more of it. Mm-hmm. It's more reliable where I'm at, which doesn't mean it's more reliable everywhere.
Sure.
If I lived on the coast in Ireland, I'm going to want wind.
Yeah.
But if in Texas, I want solar.
I was thinking that would be an easier choice than it sounded, and that's a good reason why, because it kind of depends on where you are.
And where you are.
Fast or slow zombies?
Fast zombies.
Because?
I need the practice.
It's a health plan. I see.
No, I used to shoot competitively for the military. And so fast zombies would just be better targets.
Ah, I see. It's a target practice thing. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Sense.
All right. DXB or LHR?
Dubai. Dubai is just such an eclectic part of the world that you literally can see or do almost anything. They have an indoor skiing.
Yep.
You know, snow skiing place. They have the world's largest indoor aquarium. They have obviously the tallest building, the Khalifa. They've got so many things that are one-offs that it's really, really, and everybody's welcome.
Is that reflected in the airport as well?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
airport's very, very nice. Big long runways, obviously, because it's hot. You have to have longer runway to take off and land on with the temperatures, but and obviously decreased performance of the engine.
Yeah. But really I figured it was going to be better than LHR. I guess I should have said LAX or LHR.
Yeah. Ooh, that would be tougher. LAX is probably easier because you're right there at the water. It's you can go a lot of fun places. London, you're just coming back to the States.
Yeah.
You're not really going in the other directions. So no, LA, you can go to the world.
Yeah. You head right over Dockweiler Beach and right over me, yep, laying down there drinking a beer. all right. Savory or dessert crepes?
Both.
Together?
No, not together.
Just depending on the time of day.
But wherever you are in the world, I like to enjoy what the locals enjoy. Mm-hmm. It's part of the experience.
Yeah, yeah. Could be savory, could be dessert. Just depends.
Just depends on what time it is.
Dogs or cats?
I have both. I grew up with dogs. We have a ragdoll cat that was given to us by a person who couldn't no longer keep it. Our dog is Callie. Mm-hmm. Our cat is Maggie. Callie's getting pretty old, but love her to death. She's probably the nicest dog we've ever had. If I had to say one or the other, I'm a dog person, always have been, but boy, Maggie really works her way into your heart.
It's appropriate. You can pick both. You can say yes. Dogs or cats, yes.
Yep, I'm an animal guy. I love them all.
All right. I think I know the answer to this one, but I was just curious. East Texas or West Texas?
Our farm is in East Texas, but I love all of Texas. In fact, I love the entire planet. There's no place I go where there isn't something really neat and cool and exciting to see. You go to New York City and you see where the bridges are built and how they had to build those and anchor them into their bedrock. That's pretty interesting. Most people don't even notice it.
Yeah.
East Texas, we've got the hills and the trees and the great fishing. West Texas, you've got the Guadalupe Mountains, the tallest place in Texas. You can see for 100 miles in all directions. There's no bad place.
I loved the beaches in East Texas, particularly when I lived in Austin. Driving out to the Mustang Island or places like that was always a treat. But there was something about West Texas that I felt just a little bit calmer. And that's not saying anything bad about East Texas. It was just something about the openness and the emptiness of it that got me. So I wasn't sure if there was something where you're like, yeah, I like them all, but I feel maybe a little more at home in one or the other.
My wife loves the trees in East Texas, and obviously we have a tree farm, so the trees there, and that's where we'll retire, and that's where I'll be a lot of the time after I'm done flying.
All right. Hot or cold?
Both.
At the same thing I don't time? Like is
either. Either's fine.
Yeah, you don't have a preference on that, huh?
I've grown up in Ohio where it was minus 50 and I've lived in Arizona where it was, 115, 120. What I don't like is when it's 33 or 32 and a half degrees and raining. Mm-hmm. That's miserable.
All right.
That's really the only weather I can't really defend against, quote unquote, wearing the appropriate apparel.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Brian, for chatting with me today. This was really fun. If folks want to know more about what you do or anything about you, is there a place they should go?
I will say that you've inspired me with your A Week in Tom Merritt on Substack. I actually picked up I logged in and said, hey, I'm going to give this a try.
Nice.
I haven't actually finished it yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to at least start talking a little bit. I think I have enough to say that I think it's fair that I at least put it out there and hopefully generate some conversation.
That's great, man. That's exactly why I've been doing that one that you mentioned. So I look forward to it. Let me know when it gets running.
Okay. Probably on this next trip. So probably next week.
All right. We will include a link in the show notes, folks, if it's running by the time we post this. Thanks to our producers, Jen Cutter and Anthony Lemos. Thank you for listening to this show and telling your friends about it. You can get an ad-free version of this show with Acast Plus. Click on Access Exclusive Content at awordpodcast.com, and we'll have a word with you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.